Amongst all the large-minded, broad-sweeping ideas and events of Yetzias Mitzrayim, there is a small issue that doesn't just appear small. It appears petty. It appears greedy. It appears irrelevant. And that's the clothing and the gold and the silver. There's so much that's noble about Yetzias Mitzrayim, about the ideas of Yetzias Mitzrayim, about the type of moral nation that was constructed, even in the cauldron of suffering and persecution. And all that seems to be compromised by this mitzvah, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu demands, or at least strongly requests, V'yishalu ish me'es re'ehu, V'yishra me'es re'usa, klei chasev v'chlei zahav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu in this case, is informing Paro of Makas Bechoros, and when HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes Makas Bechoros to Moshe so that Moshe can relate to Paro, all of a sudden, not just that Paro will discharge the Jewish people, but that the Jewish people will borrow. They'll, it's not like we're going to return them. Klei chesef uchlei zahav. And while the events are described, Perek Yud Beis, Egypt is frantic, they're panicky, we're all dying, Jews are being hurried out, the matzah isn't being baked. But the pasuk assures us, Uvnei Yisrael asu kidvar Moshe v'yeshalu mi'Mitzrayim klei chesef uchlei zahav usmalos. Doesn't sound appropriate, doesn't sound suitable to the type of people we are. Maybe we deserved it, maybe we received it, maybe it was even crucial to compensate the Jewish people from a moral standpoint. It was crucial to enrich the Jewish people so that, again, the original plan is to enter Eretz Yisrael and construct a mikdash and build utopia, and funds and resources are necessary. And to a degree, so much of the wealth and affluence of Egypt was driven. The jet fuel was Yosef's wise plan, so we deserved our cut after all these years with interest. But to pay such attention to it just sounds so. It sounds so greedy and so petty and so calculating, and it's not the type of people we see ourselves as. And yet it's lionized in Shir HaShirim, a famous pasuk in the first parak of Shir HaShirim, Tarei Zav Na'aseh Im Nekudos HaKasef, the male is speaking to the female and speaking about all the beautiful gold and silver, and Chazal see this as a reference to the vast riches which were acquired from Egypt. And of course, it's not just seeded or programmed into the description, but into the foreshadowing when HaKadosh Baruch Hu informs Avraham at the birth of Jewish history, Ger Yezaracha Be'eretz Lohem Va'avadum V'inosam V'achrichein Gadol, the Jewish people will depart with great wealth. Maybe necessary, but to stress it so much at such seminal moments of the description seems a bit inconsistent with who we are and how we'd like to view Yetzias Mitzrayim. So one of the approaches is a mystical approach and metaphorical approach, in which these clothing and this wealth, not really clothing, they may be, but the purpose is not to grab clothing and gold. There's something deeper. There's something more cosmological. And to understand this, let's take two steps back and get a sense of two fundamental concepts in the world of Kabbalah. Number one, Shaviras HaKelim. Number two, Klipos. You may have heard those phrases, but what do they really mean? In brief, Shaviras HaKelim means that in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's attempt to translate his infinite, ethereal, non-physical, non-containable presence into this world, which takes a series of middle, intermediate worlds for that translation. In Kabbalah, the translation is called Hishtalshelut, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's infinity can become a pen or a cell phone or an orange or at least raw material, if not material fashioned by man. That was not as successful as it could have been, or maybe could not have been, because this world proved incapable of containing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's pure, unadulterated, undivided essence. So the kelim, the receptors, or the containers, were shattered, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence became dispersed in different corners of this earth, rather than being contained in a more orderly and organized fashion. Now, many of these sparks of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence, which in Kabbalah are referred to as nitzotzos, they're less discernible because they're covered by something called a klipa. Now, a klipa literally means a shell. It doesn't have to be a physical shell. It could be anything which prevents us from really seeing the Or Hashem, the infinity, the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In a metaphoric sense, it could just be excessive evil, excessive malfunction morally. But in Kabbalah, there's less of a divide between good and evil. Because that divide, of course, courts the separation of powers, which is so antithetical for and to Judaism. There's no separate power. Satan isn't the rebellious angel. There are no forces of evil. It's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in a non-Kabbalistic world, of course it's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Hitler. HaKadosh Baruch Hu endowed Hitler with freedom of choice as every man. And Hitler went off on his evil, nefarious route and chose evil. But there's nothing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Hitler. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu supports all of life. So how could anything exist, even post-fact, even after decisions are made, without HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence constantly? So in Kabbalah, this, of course, and they're not necessarily contradictory, they're just addressing two different issues. Non-Kabbalah addresses freedom of choice and human experience. Kabbalah addresses cosmological reality and broader worlds, not just the empirical world we live in. So in the world of Kabbalah, it's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is covered by more obfuscating and distorting klipos than other times. And this brings us to the second major theory of Kabbalah, that the purpose is to collect all of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's scattered nitzotzos, all of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's scattered elements of his all-providing infinite presence, an infinite spirit, and to integrate them into one. Many people, even who aren't Kabbalistic, will recite this whole integration strategy, this whole integration theory, during Sfiras HaOmer, which is a 7x7 lattice, which naturally lends itself to Kabbalistic thought in different worlds and different layers. And that process is called Yichud, integration. And that also doesn't easily discriminate between, let's say, well, I'm going to integrate all my life, the Chesed, the Mitzvot, the Torah, but you can also integrate part of Hashem's presence by encountering less than pleasant, from a religious perspective, less than pleasant objects, people, experiences, or places. And that's at the core of Kabbalah. The collecting of nitzotzos, which typically means nitzotzos that are covered by heavy klipos, by heavy physical manifestations. Doesn't take much challenge, at least to your religious success, to collect the klipos from the next page of Bava Kama. It may be more important, but isn't as dangerous, it isn't as ambitious. But to collect the klipos from sinners or from sinful experiences that still bear the deep cored presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's more ambitious and it's more risky, but just as important. According to Kabbalah, and particularly the Sfas Emes, that's what the clothing and the gold and the silver represented. The drama in Mitzrayim becomes the prototype for this whole notion of collection of Hashem's presence, even from odd and seemingly hostile, unsuitable, incompatible environments. Bereishis Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud, describes Eretz Mitzrayim as Kigan Hashem, Ki Eretz Mitzrayim. It's a garden of Hashem. The typical interpretation is it was irrigated as a garden would be. It had fruits and vegetables as a garden would possess. But it is a strange way to refer to Mitzrayim, Kigan Hashem, Ki Eretz Mitzrayim. So for this Sfas Emes, and a lot of this is collecting Chassidish Averlach, Chassidish ideas from previous writers. Kigan Hashem Ki Eretz Mitzrayim means that Mitzrayim was a field of strewn, scattered nitzotzos. And this process of gathering had already been conducted hundreds of years before Yetzias Mitzrayim. Avram descends to Mitzrayim and ascends with great cattle. Not the cattle that interests us. Although, from a rational perspective, the cattle are important because it actualizes Hashem's promise, Vagad L'Shmecha, Ve'yeh Bracha, allows Avram resources to perform certain activities which otherwise would be more strained. But Avram starts this practice of collecting the sparks of HaKadosh Baruch Hu from Egypt. And these sparks are contained either actually or at least metaphorically in all the cattle and wealth that he ascends with from Mitzrayim. Remember, the Shvatim also ascend from Mitzrayim with great gifts, in fact, twice. Once before they discover Yosef's identity, and a second time after they discover Yosef's identity. And the fact that Yosef delivered food, and the fact that Yosef delivered gifts, that's reasonable. But why does the Torah report it, and why does the Torah indulge in it and expand upon it? Why is that so important? Because they're not just ascending Mitzrayim with cattle and clothing and jewelry. They're ascending Mitzrayim with spiritual presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being recollected into what we would call the vortex, into a more central location in Eretz Yisrael. And that is why it's so crucial for Bnei Yisrael to actively solicit the clothing, and clothing being the primary, because clothing is a perfect model for a core covered by something physical, a shell, a klipa. Because that's what clothing is. Clothing isn't really whom you are. You could change your clothing. You'd be the same person. Won't make much of a difference. Shouldn't be defined by your clothing, by your yarns. But it's certainly, while we're wearing clothing, it has that feel of integration. It has that feel of oneness and wholeness and fusion. And the clothing signifies the ascent of the deeper presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence landed or lost in Mitzrayim that are now being restored or recollected and reintegrated with the core. And the Sfas Emes also relates to the Gemara in Brachos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to intervene because somehow if the Jews were left to their own device, they may not borrow the clothing, they may not ask for the gold and silver, but Hashem asks Moshe to almost beg the Jewish people, Kideshali Yomar Osat Tzadik, so that Avram won't have any complaints against HaKadosh Baruch Hu that, well, you redeemed them as you foretold and foreshadowed, but you didn't restore their wealth. This also seems odd that Avram would have complaints to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Shemayim, that Avram would complain if we didn't exit with wealth. What difference does it make to Avram? What difference does it make to the Jewish people? HaKadosh Baruch Hu can deliver wealth in an instant, just as he can snatch it in an instant. And all of a sudden, they'd be concerned about their wealth, and Avram would come with his petty claim. But seeing the wealth and the clothing and the gold in this light, it creates completely different connotations to the conversation between Avram and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This was Avram's MO. This was Avram's mission, to collect, to integrate, to gather, to be Makari. That's who Avram was. But now history has changed a little bit. And it's either changed with the 12 Shvatim, in which Avram is no longer this traveling salesman, but now there's an actual people, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence has become more concentrated, and they don't need to. And here's where there's a little bit of almost healthy tension. Is it better to collect nitzanos? It's definitely necessary. But is it better to be a spark collector? Or is it better to be so holy that you don't need it and you're not interested in it? From a certain level, you think that since it's cosmological, then that entails the paradigm, the perfection, the ideal. But on the other hand, as it's risky and as it creates contact points between the world of good and the world of evil, maybe it should be avoided. And somehow this transformation, this metamorphosis, begins with Yaakov's children, where Yaakov's children don't feel that need, aren't interested in the nitzotzos, they're too holy, the Jewish people, certainly hundreds of years later. And they would not necessarily be sensitive to this had HaKadosh Baruch Hu not re-emphasized and reinforced the importance of these nitzotzos, the importance of the clothing, the importance of the gold and the silver, the importance of the people. Remember, they don't just extricate gold and silver. They don't just mine it from the quarry of Egypt, but they take people with them, Erev Rav. take Egyptians with them. So they're taking not just spirit embedded in inanimate objects, but spirit embedded in people. And this comes back to bite them. This will ultimately sabotage them because the Erev Rav are responsible, at least according to Chazal, for the Egel. The Kesef and the Zahav, as Chazal, Gemara in Bracha says, that the gold and the silver tempted them and tantalized them and induced them to perform the Egel Hazav, or at least enabled it. So the Jewish people's disinterest in this world of Nitzotzos was real. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to intervene. His intervention was based on Avram's concern. And Avram's concern wasn't about how wealthy the Jews would be. Avram's concern was, what about my agenda of transforming the world? What about my agenda? Remember, Avram's the ger collector par excellence. And at a certain point, the Gemara in Yavama says that Kashim Gerim Leisrael, that we no longer are interested in Gerim. And what about Avram? And Avram is almost pained. What about the aftermath or the impact of his revolution? So it's a whole different spin. This is the Sfasem is primarily in Parshas Bo, the year Taf Resh Mem Gimel, to a part of the Yetzias Mitzrayim, which we sometimes sweep or brush under the carpet because it feels uncomfortable. There's so many surpassing ideas at the heart of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And then there's this greedy grab of gold and silver. We often don't know what to make of it. And the Sfasem provides an entirely different metaphoric view of what these gold and silver symbolize.